Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode in the Week in Reviews. A chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the music industry. But as happened in the past, my guest today is missing. But maybe he will turn up shortly. In the meantime, let's play one of his tracks. This is J.L. Styles' Song Beside My Grave.
Die, I hope you play the song beside my grave, so I know a part of me will always be saved with you. Say it with your bare hands on my beat up old guitar. Play it on a warm night like the one when our desire burned bright. And if I walk away through this long, long, lonely winter, in truth you will remain. And if I make the grade, I'll never fall and calling forevermore. So if I die, I hope you play the song beside my grave. Think of it as one more little thing I had to say to you. Long, long, lonely winter, my love for you remains. And I will feel the rain on a long, hot summer day calling forevermore. So you see, I'm not a liar trying to get along, telling you I love you even though my body's gone for good.
I do believe that we have the technical problem solved. JL, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. I was wondering if we might start with a really boring question. Well, boring to you, but maybe not so boring to our listeners. tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is J.L. Styles?
Well, J.L. Styles comes from Connecticut. That's where I grew up. I was born in Maryland and, you know, grew up in Connecticut from about age 3 to, you know, through college. And moved down to New Orleans for about 5 years and then, and then made it out here.
Out here being where?
Oh, San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of moved around a lot. And you see, the thing is that Connecticut isn't really a place you want to stay. I mean, it's lovely and all, but there's not that much to do there. I don't know whether you've heard of that or not, but I've never heard of Connecticut being a bastion of, you know, partying and fun and, you know.
Nah.
I
read a lot, and I don't recall Connecticut being party central.
No, and I don't recall a lot of ragtime finger pickers really coming out of Connecticut, as far as I know. But, you know, I would be one somehow.
Okay, and I have to ask you about that. I love your style of playing, and I find it hard to believe that you would have picked that style up in Connecticut.
Well, I didn't, per se. I really went into it much more when I moved down to New Orleans. But I did kind of have a thing for the old style acoustic playing, you know, even in Connecticut. But I met a lot of good players down in New Orleans who picked in that style, figure picked in that style, or thereabouts. And that really got me into it full on. And, I just realized it's a great technique because, you can do so much with it outside of the blues and ragtime. I mean, you can, the song Beside My Grave, the song that was just on, that's basically like a blind Blake thumb roll, you know, what they call a blind Blake thumb roll. I just put it on kind of a different beat and just did a little different thing with it, but it's very much out of the, you know, if I'd never learned ragtime guitar, I'd never have played that song like that.
Well, let's talk about Beside My Grave. I think it's just a wonderful song. You don't need to be into the blues, the rags, or anything else. I mean, it's just a genuinely pretty song.
Yeah, well, I want to get out. Yeah, I definitely, thank you. I really wanted to get outside of the, you know, as a songwriter, you kind of, you hear what you hear, and you listen, and you hear what you hear, and you just translate it, and, you know, usually it comes out pretty unique to the individual. I didn't really want it to be limited to a blues crowd or something like that. I just want it to be its own thing.
Is there a story behind the song? I mean, it is just a classic.
Well, I woke up, somehow in the morning. When I get up and late evenings, I think it has something to do with the fact that it's really quiet during those times. You know, I live in the city, and you know, during those times, just everything quiets down, and I don't know, you know, songs just kind of come to me a lot of times at that time, and I kind of just played the first, the first line of it. I just played it, and, it just came out really quickly, you know, just immediately. And then it was like, you know, it was such a, it was so easy just to go from there. It just kind of wrote itself. I didn't consciously write it about anything in particular. I sang that first line, and then the rest just came out.
Okay. So, you know, the obvious next question, did you start with the words or the music?
I would, on that one, I actually started with, I don't know, I can't even really remember. I would think that I would have started with the guitar line. You know, that's basically the melody of the first line. And I think I probably just started with that and then just sang it right away, right over it. And then it was done, you know. I'm pretty sure that's how it happened because it's, you know, it is a Blind Blake kind of a style. And I just kind of heard it, you know, with a different rhythm than he would play it and play something like that. And just found that melody in there and just was like, oh, that's pretty, and then just sang right over it, and it was pretty much done. You know, it didn't take long to write it.
I love the answer. I've talked to gazillions of musicians, and you know, some are adamant that lay down the music first, and ruminate on it, and come up with words. You know, others prefer the words, and then ruminate on the musical approach. But it seems that you prefer to deal with it all at the same time.
Well, it actually depends. Like, I find that, like, a lot of the, I mean, sometimes it will happen, I mean, usually it will happen like, you know, Song Beside My Grave in the beginning. I'll just, you know, it'll start itself. Sometimes it'll take a while for it to write itself the rest of the way. In this case, it was really fast. A lot of times, you know, I wouldn't say the majority of the time, but sometimes I will have the melody and the chords and the bridge and everything, and maybe the hook, one of the hook lines or something in it, but I'll have to fill in all of the rest. And that can take some time, you know, but sometimes I let stuff like that sit around for years, and I'll write another one and another one like that, and they'll just sit around, and then eventually the old ones that I didn't finish will pop back into my mind, and I'll finish them. And so it's kind of like a continual process with a lot of songs. I don't always write them that quickly all at once. That's not that often. It's great when that happens.
You mentioned a really interesting thing, the hook. Now, I tend to play more with books than music, but I understand the idea of the hook. Is it the same thing? You know, you start a song off, but there has to be a hook. You know, something that will keep the listener excited.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some songs just don't even have a hook, and they're awesome. You know, there's just no rules to what seems to work. You know, I haven't really figured that out. But a lot of times, you know, for me, I tend to come up with like a couple of nucleus lines that just sort of like lead to everything else. And you know, like with Song Beside My Grave, it might take longer or shorter amount of time to flesh it out, but, you know, I tend to write just like, I'll sing a line, you know, for whatever reason, I don't even know, I'll just sing something, and it'll be some sort of a line. And a lot of times that'll be the hook, you know, that'll be like some hooky line that gets repeated in there. And then the rest forms around it. Yeah, it's a weird process. I don't really understand the whole process of songwriting that well because it happens in so many different ways. But
I don't think anyone understands the process.
I don't really get it.
At what age did you decide to start singing and writing?
Well, I was I didn't start playing the guitar and being a musician until I was a senior in high school, like about almost 18, I guess. I did always like music a lot, and I was always singing. You know, I think a lot of kids, I mean, they make up little songs and sing them, you know. But I do remember making up songs about, you know, silly things, whatever, you know, like a 10-year-old would be thinking about. And, you know, I always kind of had music in my heart, you know, just from a pretty young age. My earliest experience with music would have been Ike and Tina Turner. And my dad used to play that version of Proud Mary for me. And for some reason, that one got me every time, you know. I was like 4 or 3 or something. And I would always go crazy for Ike and Tina Turner and Chuck Berry, too. And, you know, I think, you know, so, you know, once you get music in your heart, you know, who knows? You know, it just sort of depends on where you choose to go or where your mind just tends to wander.
Well, obviously, I have to ask the question. You know, who are your musical influences? And I doubt that the answer is Ike and Tina.
No, actually not. I mean, they're more R&B soul. But I would say my biggest influences, you know, on my playing would have been the old, you know, the old blues finger picker people like Blind Blake and Mississippi John Hurt and Jimmy Reed was a big influence. Even though he's a pure blues man, his delivery, you know, really, I learned a lot from just listening to how he delivered a song vocally and really just like savor the words. You know, and I, of course, loved all the classic, because I grew up in the 70s and 80s and stuff. I love all the classic rock stuff. I loved...
You're a youngster. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the 80s, there was no good music.
By the time the 80s came around, I mean, it kind of lost the luster. I kind of feel like we did like a skip. We went from the 60s and then just skipped right. You know, we skipped right into the 80s, and then there wasn't that much there per se. But I did like the Police. I loved Rush too. I really liked that band back in the 80s. You know, there was plenty of good music back then. It was sort of the burgeoning punky scene was going on. The Ramones were back then, and so it definitely had its fertility. But yeah, I mean, it got into a period where it just became really cheesy and you know, not really my style per se for a while, but you know, every era has its gems, you know. I always loved David Bowie too. He's been a big influence, just because David Bowie does everything, you know. He's very bluesy and very just like thick voiced, but he gets really freaky and you know, goes into his own territory, obviously. And he was, you know, he was prevalent in the 80s. So, you know, even though he's from the late 60s, basically. But.
Actually, I'm amazed that you bring up the name. Earlier today, I was watching a quite splendid DVD all about David Bowie between 1969 and 1971, a documentary. he is a genuinely interesting guy.
Yeah, he's quite unique, and he's just so prolific, and he's sort of a freak of nature. I just heard his new song actually, which was quite good. Came out with it. He just put out a new song.
Okay, well, let's get back to the more important question. Are you a stage kind of guy or a studio kind of a guy?
I would say I'm definitely a stage kind of a guy. And the reason, you know, and I think, you know, this album really reflects that in a certain way, because I went to record it. The producer and I, we went to go record, and I was thinking, you know, I was going to track the guitar, then track the vocals, and you know, track the drums separately and do that kind of a thing. And he was like, no, you're playing it live. You know, you're going to play your guitar, and you're going to sing with your guitar, and we'll track the drums with you in a separate room, but we're going to do it live. You know, I want to get the feel of you playing. And because he valued that I'm a player, that I like to perform live. And so, yeah, definitely I'm a live player. I like to, just be in my guitar is usually enough. And then I just stack on the vocal harmonies and, you know, other instruments. And yeah, I love performing. You know, that's when the unpredictable happens, and you have to really go with the moment and just be in it and listen. And yeah, I mean, that's where the magic happens.
I am a fan of live. Live is live. There's no take backs, there's no editing. It is what it is.
It's got that chance of, I mean, at least if you see a good band and they're playing acoustically and they're not all processed, or, you know, they're, even if they're electric, if they're actually playing for you, you know, there's a dissonance, you know, there's a little bit of a contradiction. You know, not everything sounds perfect, and not everything is, you know, perfectly in tune and perfectly played, and you know, there's tension there. It's a living, breathing organism, and there's nothing like it. You know, it still seems that, you know, with all the other entertainment going on, still people like to go see somebody play.
Yeah.
At least that's not being taken away from us. At least we can see bands play actual instruments with their hands. And,
right. We played Beside My Grave. I'm wondering, would you have any objection if I was to play Beneath the Light?
Oh, no. Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay.
That's a rocker.
Walked on after you, and I saw you in the light.
Now, that's a very different song from the first one that I played.
Yeah.
Is there a story behind it?
Well, this is another one where I just started playing the guitar riff and sang the first line. I walked on after you, and saw you in the light, and you know, just the first couple of lines just came right out, and I was like, well, this is kind of sounds like some sort of like spy song or something. I don't know what, you know, and so I just made it about international takeover and bribery and assassination, really. It's the story of, you know, an economic hitman of sorts coming in, and that's who I am, and I'm trained by this beautiful assassin. And I go in and, you know, make the deal to the, you know, third world leader of your choice. I don't know, wherever, somewhere down in South Latin America. They've all been screwed over by the United States in one way or another in this very fashion. You know, gave him the deal and he refuses. And then I have a change of heart and go against my masters. And then in the end, I'm on the run, running for my life. Most likely will be killed. And that's the story. But I don't imagine everybody would get, you know. Somebody actually said that to me, this song. Actually, it's about. I'm amazed.
okay. I'm going to go back to music rather than politics.
Yeah.
Is it true? Because it certainly sounded like it, but you use a 12 string rather than a 6 string guitar?
Well, actually, on this record, I didn't use much 12 string on this one. That one I basically used, you know, the acoustic guitar I played on that track and sang with while the drummer was playing. You can't really even hear that acoustic guitar on the track. It's really underneath, buried underneath. And I layered on the top of that the electric guitar strum and the leads, and then we put the harmonies on there and the bass and everything else. So you can't really even hear the acoustic guitar very much on there, but it is in there, deep down in there. But I didn't really use much 12 string on this. I used to use the 12 string a lot more, and I don't know why I haven't used it that much lately. I just, the 6 string seems more versatile, I guess, or just more work. I don't like to put so many guitars out when I go play out live either. I just like to have one guitar with me and just play the thing the whole time and not have to, you know, get a bunch of guitars, put a bunch of guitars on. Yeah.
Well, you can always take two six string guitars, you know, and super glue them together.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible if I did, we could do a little trick or something, have someone stand behind play, you know, have a Jimmy Page guitar and, you know, double neck guitar and have someone stand behind me and play it. But really, you know, I mean, the 12 string is a beautiful sound. I do still love playing it. But it's sometimes it doesn't work for everything, you know, and you have to be clever to use it in a studio because it's really jangly. You know, and it takes up a lot of space with those 12 strings. You have to be, you know, really crafty with how you use that thing in studio.
Okay, I'm not a musician. I couldn't play anything. I couldn't play a 1 string guitar. But, you know, 12-string guitar looks difficult. You've got, what, 6 strings, you know, doubled up? Am I right in that?
The main difficulty with a 12-string is in the tension. You know, it does have, considerably more tension than a 6-string. And so, yeah, it's harder to get around on it quite as fluidly. But it kind of depends on what kind you have. I mean, I used to finger pick all the time on that thing and just, you know, do everything on that I do on a 6-string. So, yeah, it's really not much different at all. But there is more tension. You know, you got to press 2 strings down. You know, you need a little bit stronger hand for that. But really not much different. It's more style. I mean, certain things work on a 12-string much better than on a 6, and vice versa.
Of course. I mean, you know, some things sound better on organ than a piano.
Yeah.
Well, our time is running out, but we obviously have to do the shameless commercial. Where can people find your new CD?
Well, the best way is to go right to the website, jlstiles.com. JLSTILES. And you can get it from there really easily. You can download it or order a hard copy. And I think I'm going to print some vinyl of this too, as well, eventually. But right now it's just CD and downloads. You can get right off the site, JLSTILES.
Okay. And is it available on such boring sites as Amazon or, places like that?
Of course, it's on iTunes and it's, I don't know if it's on, yeah, it must be on Amazon too. And it's on CD Baby. Bandcamp actually is my preferred one. It's all my stuff's on Bandcamp. And I pretty much sell whenever I can through them. I like their service.
Okay, and I have one last question.
Ask away, no worries.
and it's probably a question that you're going to go, huh? I talk to lots of musicians, lots of authors and lots of filmmakers. And when I come up with a name, J.L. Stiles, I go, what the hell does J.L. stand for?
It's so, a lovely name. My God-given name, Jonathan Levy.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my name. And I had a friend, the reason why I got to JL is I had a friend here from, a really good friend from L.A., and down L.A. they always use, you know, it's a thing kind of down Long Beach area, well, not L.A. per se, but Orange County, California, where they call you by your initials, you know. And so he would always call me J.L., and I just converted it to, you know, my stage name. And I stole my stepmom's maiden name, Stiles, because I thought it was a very cool name, S-T-I-L-E-F. And, you know, just they're happy about it. I don't know if my, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's cool. The family's very cool with it. They're, you know, it gets a little confusing, you know, because people know me as John or Jonathan, and don't know what to call me, and I just say, you know, any name is fine, whichever one you want to use. Don't call me a-hole. You know,
it's just one of those questions that I always want to ask people.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I guess if you asked Bob Dylan back in the day, he might have told you, you know, that it was Zimmerman. But apparently somebody he was playing a show out here. It was pretty recently, and someone was working backstage and went up to him and said, "Oh, Mr. Zimmerman, do you blah blah blah?" And he's like, "You don't know me well enough to call me Zimmerman." Like, you call me Dylan. You know, you don't know me as Zimmerman. You don't know me actually. You just know Dylan. So he got a little prickly actually at being called Zimmerman. It's not as glamorous a name. I mean, a Zimmerman sounds more like, you know, you might be, you know, a lawyer or something. Yeah. You know, Google Jonathan Levy, for instance. Google Jonathan Levy. You'll find, like, doctors and lawyers.
I have Googled Mr. Zimmerman. I know exactly who he is.
Hello?
It's delightful, but I'm being growled at by my person in the studio, so
yeah.
I have to thank you for...
my pleasure.
Oh, wonderful, and... I really do hope that you have great success with this CD. Personally, I think it's wonderful.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I will work on it. I'll keep playing shows. I don't have any choice.
Okay. I'll talk to you again soon.
Right.
All right. Later, Gator. Bye.